90% of all scientists that have ever been alive are alive today. That's a lot of information. But don't panic. It's not an exact science.
Hey, Shannon, how are you?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. You were on spring break last week, so while you did things, the rest of us continued to toil.
I know. You forget about how awesome spring breaks are, right? Well, so my son had soccer practice every day of spring break, and so that was kind of a bummer. But then we wound up not doing that at all because we were all just cycling the flu back and forth between everyone in the house. So it wasn't a lovely spring break.
Yeah, that sounds pretty terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. But, oh well, it's gone. We're in the meat of spring, you know. Time for us to all start ramping down, not me, and then you to start ramping up, right, when we all come begging for you to work for us in the summer.
Yeah, it's proposal season, so everybody's putting proposals in to various agencies, DOE, NSF, and we got a lot of proposal requests we're working on right now, a lot of work in process, and it's always a little bit of a scary time for me because we love helping create these proposals and ideas for machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little weird because you don't know, you know, we're generally running something like 6 months out a lot of the time, but we don't really know if in 4, 5, 6 months when these people hear back on their proposal, like if none of them get funded, we're going to be pretty light on work.
Yeah, that's so scary.
And if all of them get funded, that's also a problem.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's less of an issue than it used to be because we are somewhat, I'm not going to say we're caught up, but we're running a little closer than we normally would. But we've got a lot more jobs flowing through every year now.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, it's been a little bit, I'm not going to say slow, but it's been relaxed enough that we've been able to just kind of go in and turn the crank and make things. But that's over now.
Oh, that's not okay. What a bummer.
Yeah. I actually got a new laptop.
What?
I did. Because so
I'm so excited.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't get that excited, but one of my employees has my old ThinkPad.
Okay.
So I had that ThinkPad when I was doing the business part time.
Mm-hmm.
And then hired one person. They used it for a while. Then he got it. And it's kind of been cycled around. And he said, well, you know, it's getting a little, we're having a hard time doing some of these big CAD things that we're doing now. I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, we've had that thing a while. I said, I'll look up when I bought it. So that computer's almost 8 years old.
Ooh, impressive.
I mean, it's still running great. But I had the realization that if it fails, I may as well pay that person to stay home.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Like, we're that dependent on the computers for drawing parts, for making parts, for... So even if I, you know, overnighting a new computer, we're still down for a day or two.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, we have other computers around the shop. These are CAD computers.
Right.
These are
lots of
big graphics cards, right? 64 gigs of RAM, you know, big beefy computers.
Oh, I feel a Tim Allen sort of home improvement.
Exactly.
Grunt coming. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, well, you know, I think it's time. Most companies obsolete tech after 5 years.
Ours is 3, I think.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I cycled the computer I had down. And that computer that person was using is now a spare. And then I got a new ThinkPad.
Excellent.
And yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not super exciting because I basically bought the same machine, but with new stuff in it. like it's the same screen size, it's the same model series. I can't say enough good things about them because I have a machine that's 8 years old and still running great.
Wow. Man, see, so we are required to only get one model of laptop. That's it. We don't have a choice, even if we're using our own grant money. It's quite contentious.
I mean, obviously. Nobody does anything but Excel and PowerPoint and Word.
Right. Absolutely no one, right? None of us. And now we also cannot install any programs whatsoever. And there was a big IT forum, which the faculty all went crazy, as we should have, about like, hey, what if we do our own programming? What are we supposed to do if we can't even install our own programs? And all that jazz. And somebody asked me like what the big deal was. They're like, what's the big deal about this? I'm like, we would all have ThinkPads if we were able to. That's what we'd all want. Like, that's what all the science people want. Yep. Why not? And this further reinforces my argument that, yes, the laptops that we are hamstrung to, no one asked us what we wanted, you know?
I mean, these things, you know, we've drug them through who knows how many countries and labs. They sit out by milling machines, getting sprayed with stuff. Like, we don't go easy on them. And yeah, this is the third ThinkPad I've bought in a row, and I will continue to buy them. I bought ThinkCenters for our lasers. Like,
oh, nice.
I am very pro ThinkPad.
No kidding. Do they have a lot of bloatware on them?
No, that's the other beautiful thing.
Oh, though, so like, I really love the Lenovo's, but I can't do it anymore because of all the bloat on there.
Well, I mean, Lenovo owns the ThinkPad line now.
Now, yeah. So that's what made me nervous about it.
But most of the time when I get a computer, I hard reset it the second I take it out of the box anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, nope, just give me stock vanilla Windows 11 with nothing else.
Yeah.
Had some interesting issues with old pieces of software not keeping up and that sort of thing. But no, it's I think it's actually heavier than my old ThinkPad.
What did we like calculate it out? It was like how many gallons of water or something like that. Like,
it's like 2 or 2.5 gallons or something ridiculous.
Oh my Lord. So it also doubles as a self-defense.
It's self-defense. It's a shield. It's
paperweight, all the things.
It's very heavy, but yeah, I changed That's this awesome. Week. You know, I spent last weekend kind of doing the install all the apps and transfer all my files over. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, I'm super excited. It's been chugging along well. And now that all the ThinkPads use the same USB-C dock and they have used, ThinkPads have used the same charger since I had my first ThinkPad, which was a Pentium 1.
Oh my gosh. That has to be like a record in the computing industry, right? Like,
yeah. Okay.
That's
now,
amazing.
I take that back. Maybe it wasn't the very first one. I think the very first one had a barrel jack. It might have been right after that. Anyway, for years, they've had the same power connector.
That's awesome.
And the beautiful thing is now, like, we can just leave power adapters, like, in the machining area. And then whoever walks back there to work, you can just plug your laptop in and get to work.
Because everyone has the same one. Yeah.
I think we've got the front desk uses a desktop, so that doesn't count for that.
Right.
And then our electronics guy uses a Dell. It's one of those that folds over and doubles as a tablet kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that computer...
I don't understand those.
I mean, it's done a great job. I don't expect it to last 8 years like the ThinkPads will. And we'll probably end up replacing it. Maybe not with like the full CAD workstation ThinkPad, but with a ThinkPad when it dies.
No kidding. I have to say, I haven't used it every day for quite a while. Well, for the last couple of years. But my MacBook Pro is 10 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't notice anything wrong with it. But, again, we're not really supposed to have those anymore, so.
I mean, that's... I did the shadow computing thing when restrictions like that came down of, like, okay, like, I'll go buy my own laptop with my own money and connect it to the guest network.
Right.
Stop me now.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly where I'm at. And I will tell you that the laptop I'm thinking of buying is the, oh gosh, I can't even say it. I don't even want to embarrass myself. It's the Samsung PowerBook. Yep. I was like, God, you know, I'm just going to get this one with this like gaming graphics card and play Minecraft all day.
Well, and also you're in the Samsung ecosystem.
I am. And so like, I figured if I'm going to go in, I'm going to go all in, right? That's what I'm going to do.
So I don't know if they would necessarily agree with this, but in my mind, as a testament to ThinkPad, one of my employees got a new phone and decided to get a Think phone because of how solid the ThinkPads have been.
Wow.
And there's integration. Like, I think you can either you can use it as a second screen or the ThinkPad can be a screen for the phone. I don't know. There's some like
mind melding
that happens with them.
Oh, so that's why I wanted the Samsung, because yeah, it will meld across all your things.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have a Galaxy Watch, but I do have a tablet that I use quite a bit. So I didn't even know there was a Think phone. That's very exciting.
You know, and I mean, I've been in the iPhone world forever and it's pretty good. I doubt I'll leave it as much as I would like to say I would. But man, the Think phone makes it tempting.
I thought you got a Google phone at one point.
No, I looked real hard at getting the Google phone and I don't remember. Something stopped me from doing it because we're in the Google ecosystem at work.
Right, yeah. So this is interesting, and it kind of goes along with what I did before spring break. And we didn't talk too much about it, but I went on a little trip to look at StraboSpot, that digital mapping software that's being used by a lot of field camps now. And I brought my tablet that has StraboSpot, but I haven't used it a lot, right? So I downloaded it. It was ready to go for the little demonstration. But they don't have Compass integration on Android devices.
Right.
And a long time ago, they said they were only going to do iOS. And then they were like, no, we'll do everything. And I was like, why can't I make my strike and dip work? You know, I just thought I was messing it up. And apparently, it's because Android devices are so diverse that the compasses within them aren't up to snuff unilaterally. So many of them fell outside the error. And so they just turned off the compass feature for Android devices.
Right.
Yeah. So that was kind of a bummer. And that made me think for 5 seconds, I might go get an iPhone. But then I came to my senses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things that I do on the iPhone that are really nice. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's and like, you know, I'm in enough ecosystems where I've got enough app controlled devices that it's going to be a big deal for me to switch out of the iPhone.
To switch phones. Yeah. I mean, all this stuff we're talking about, it's all part of this technosphere that we take part in, isn't it?
Oh my. So yes, this is an episode on ways that we in Western science further subdivide the Earth.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, I was like, well, this is kind of like our little back to basics, but no. And then I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole and I thought that we would talk about this because that is something that we do in Western science, is we have to categorize everything. And in doing so, we make these, in some cases, arbitrary distinctions. And these things belong in these little boxes and they don't interact with each other at all, right? But this is a very elementary school way of looking at the Earth. And we still do it. And I use this graphic that I sent you that has all these different categories. I use this in class too. But I found some just funny things about all the spheres of the Earth, but I thought we could just talk about them in general, because there's five that we always talk about, essentially, sometimes really just four, when we're talking about dividing the Earth.
Right. And you did find a list of 17.
The list of 17.
And a few of them, as two people with PhDs in geoscience can tell you, were just wrong. And clearly, in my mind, something that somebody fed a prompt into ChatGPT and posted whatever garbage came out.
Oh, but this is like the dangers of the internet, right? Because like this website looks fine. It looks legit. It doesn't seem like you should not believe what it's saying.
The less legit the website looks, the more you should believe it probably, because it's somebody that actually spent their money on doing the research and doing the thing, not hiring fancy graphic designers.
Yeah, that is exactly right. Except for this one, like, Cosmo one that I just love this graphic so much. Which is from, it's from the European Space Agency, this graphic in general. And I don't know, it just looks so cool.
Right.
And I mean, these are the spheres that you learn in elementary school, right? The easiest one, the one we talk about a lot, I feel like, that most people think when you're like, come up with a cycle, you always talk about the water cycle, right? So the hydrosphere is one way that we categorize the Earth, clearly having to do with all the water.
Right. And this, no, I mean, you think about how you're going to divide a system as complicated as the Earth, right? If it's some kind of linear thing, you know, you chunk it up into pieces. For a globe, a spheres make sense, but even the hydrosphere has got pieces from really the core all the way out to the edge of space.
Right, exactly. So we already know there's water in the mantle, and we don't know how far that water goes down, and then there's water in the atmosphere, obviously, way up there. And so that hydrosphere does run that gamut. Obviously, it's controlled a lot by the oceans, which is most of our planet. And then you go down a creepy rabbit hole of, my gosh, we don't even understand 70% of our planet, really.
Right.
I'm listening to Simon Winchester's book, Atlantic, and it's really mind-blowing. That's why I started with hydrosphere. Just the oceans are just this unbelievably terrifying thing, but also incredibly intriguing, and he's always a great narrator, so I highly recommend.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, you've got water in the mantle, you've got the ocean, we've got lots of currents in the ocean, and then we get interaction at the surface with wind to create waves, and we get interaction with sunlight, which vaporizes water, and then we get up into the atmosphere, but that's still really part of the hydrosphere.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And so what I feel like, I don't feel like I learned this in elementary school, but it's something that gets pulled out now, is adjacent to this hydrosphere. So you just think about all the water on Earth, but a lot of our water at this point in geologic time is locked up in ice, right? And so now we sort of make the cryosphere its own thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's many people, many of which we've talked to on the show, that do glacial research and deal with the cryosphere. There's journals dedicated to the cryosphere. There's mailing lists dedicated to the cryosphere. It's a very big deal, largely because this is, as you said, one of the few times where the cryosphere is a significant part of the system, and we're doing our best to make sure that's not the case.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I have no doubts that, you know, by the end of our careers, we will not be talking about the cryosphere anymore because it won't be there. So there we go. But do you remember this as being one of those spheres?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, not at all, right? So it's really important, and it plays a different role than just the hydrosphere. I think mostly because of, I mean, to me, it seems like it's important climatologically because of like the albedo effect that you get from having a globe that has very shiny things on both ends.
I mean, for sure. And, you know, we've got all this ice that's on land, so it's not floating. It's not, I mean, some of it's floating, but largely it's not floating.
Yeah.
It's not in circulation. Mm-hmm. So that's contributing to why sea level is not incredibly high right now.
Right.
And it's a very important driver of our weather.
Right, exactly. And just like I said, it has so much to do with the climate because of how reflective that ice is. But now it's becoming a really important process because it's changing so quickly. And so arguably this cryosphere is one of the ones that has the most flux in it right now, just in terms of processes. And so that's why we have so many people on the show that deal with this, because it's a very dynamic part of the spheres of the Earth at this point in time.
Well, you know, just like we always say, it's the same physics at a different time scale. Like, the atmosphere evolves incredibly rapidly, but it doesn't have nearly the density contrast that we have in the Earth.
Right.
You know, I've talked before about the core mantle boundary has a bigger density contrast than the air-Earth boundary.
That's so weird.
like, it just doesn't have the contrast, but the cryosphere really is, I mean, ice is a mineral, yeah, and drink. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things that we always say on here, right?
Exactly.
And it's really geology sped up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Exact same physics. And then you get dirty ice, and that's a whole different thing with the albedo. And yeah. So cryosphere.
Cryosphere. That's one. Yep. We've mentioned a lot of that. Well, I mean, it interacts with, I think this is where you're going to go. We've mentioned atmosphere now
twice. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because all that reflected radiation, the solar radiation that's coming in and getting reflected by the ice at the poles, you know, is going, traveling back out through the atmosphere. But now the atmosphere is such a large part. So we had we didn't have a shared professor, but our igneous professor that I don't think you had to take, Dr. Weaver used to make fun of me and say, the atmosphere is such a small part of our Earth, Shannon. Why would you ever be interested in studying it? And he would say it so much. And I was like, by weight, maybe. It would make me so mad. But obviously, there's a lot going on here. And it's very important.
I don't know how accurate the comparison is. But I've heard the analogy before of, if the Earth was the size of a basketball, the atmosphere would be thinner than a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
That seems back of the envelope, probably about right.
Yeah, but still. Very.
Right.
So, obviously, it's important for us, right? Because without our current atmospheric makeup, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and the atmosphere is, again, very dynamic, not only in that weather happens, but climate happens, and happens in these long-term cycles. And yeah, the atmospheric chemistry has varied wildly in Earth's past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're putting a lot of carbon emissions into the atmosphere right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're also contributing a lot of methane through farming of animals.
Right. Hopefully we're not about to contribute a lot more methane when all the clathrates melt in the hydrosphere.
I can't remember who gave this talk, but I think it was in an LPSC back in like 2011, somewhere in there. Somebody gave a talk and they measured all of the amounts of methane that could be released from different hydrate reservoirs in kilocows, which was the equivalent of how many thousand cows it would take to release that much methane in a year.
Kilocows. Oh, that's amazing.
So if you were the person that gave that talk at LPSC.
Yes.
I still remember that talk, you know, here over 10 years later. So pat yourself on the back and come on the show.
Oh, no kidding. Kilocals. Oh, gosh, that's so great. So I could say something really controversial in that the atmosphere is the most... I don't know. Maybe this isn't controversial. I feel like I need to protect myself against Dr. Weaver's constant insults for that whole semester of like all the other spheres sort of come together in the atmosphere. Like the atmosphere affects all of the other spheres.
Right? I would say largely, yeah, for sure.
More so than any of the other ones, right? Because like you could, even though ice is a mineral... You could technically talk about the cryosphere without talking a lot about the lithosphere. A little bit. But the atmosphere comes into all of them, right? Because all the precipitation that's going on in the hydrosphere, obviously you don't get ice without precipitation, or the temperature changes that come about because of the atmosphere. And then we don't live here if the atmosphere isn't of a certain composition. And then everything that the atmosphere surface interactions happen at the lithosphere to change what the lithosphere looks like. So
you can tell Dr. Weaver important. That by surface area, you win.
I'm going to have to call him out of retirement so I can tell him. Also, the graphic for atmosphere on this link that I'm sure we can include is pretty cool.
Well, and also to me, atmosphere, so a lot of these, like the cryosphere, okay, it encompasses cold things. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. The hydrosphere, by definition, encompasses wet things.
Wet things.
The atmosphere doesn't really ever end. It just kind of logarithmically fades away.
So if we go half the distance to the wall and then half the
distance
again. Exactly. And plus, you get the northern lights in the atmosphere. By far the best graphic of all these.
Yeah, I mean, you get things happening from the scale of wind interacting with grass and forests and friction effects there, up through the boundary layer, then up into storms and normal kind of like where clouds are floating around. Then we get up into the upper atmosphere where, yeah, you get things like the aurora and all these cool electrical effects.
Right, exactly. What were those noctilucent? No, not noctilucent clouds. Are those the really high clouds? What were those called? Remember those like 80,000 feet clouds?
I think it was noctilucent.
It is?
Okay. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that blew my mind. I think about those all the time. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can have clouds made of water and clouds made of ice. All of it exists in the atmosphere.
And one of those clouds, So it's not pure ice, is it, right? It has condensation nuclei in it.
Yes.
Condensation nuclei are largely little pieces of junk that's been kicked up. Pollen,
right.
Dust, dirt. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like it meets the definition of a rock to me. It's a combination of different minerals.
That's right. Gosh, look at you. Amazing. All the same physics and all the same definitions.
There's no density requirement on being a rock.
Oh, man. I wish there was on being a student. Oh, just kidding. Oh, so that brings us to the good old lithosphere, which is hard to say lithosphere, right? You could use the word geosphere. I think that makes more sense, but we use the word lith as rock. So I don't know. It's kind of a...
Yeah, I mean, lithosphere to me as a geophysicist means something very different than all the rock stuff.
Exactly. And this is a very confusing point because I think if you look up like spheres on the Earth, like lithosphere is the most commonly used.
Yeah, I think so.
Has the word geosphere on it, but then also that makes me think of the journal geosphere. So I don't know. I'm just too close to this sphere to talk about, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to me, lithosphere is the hard stuff on top.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And then asthenosphere is the plasticky stuff below it. Mm-hmm. And then below that is metal.
Correct. That's exactly how I see it.
And we did find, this is one of the incorrect things we found, where one website said that the core, inner and outer, are called the mesosphere. And yes. I never once have been able, or have I heard that, and I found no references to it anywhere other than this one suspicious site.
And the site, it's the first of the 17 spheres listed. Why on earth would you start there?
Right. Like,
why? Why is that the first thing you're listing?
Also, I mean, the mesosphere is part of the atmosphere. With the atmosphere, we didn't break it down into all the different subspheres there. We have done and talked about that in the past.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, the mesosphere is part of the atmosphere. So I don't know where they got that mesosphere had anything to do with inner and outer core.
Super strange. And the picture they show doesn't even label the mesosphere. It just lets you assume, I mean, they have the entire surface of the, Yeah. Terrible, terrible website.
So, yeah, you got the geosphere, and it interacts with, gosh, a lot of stuff. And the atmosphere touches it a lot, because though it's not thought about a lot by, I don't think, the general public, geologists know that the atmosphere and the oceans, to some extent, and rocks all just pass carbon back and forth.
Right, exactly, which is super, super important, right? So the carbon cycle is a definite big-time driver of a lot of things that are going on, and especially related to the biosphere, because that's where a lot of that carbon comes from, that everything else is flipping about back and forth.
I mean, in the words of Scrubs, everything comes down to poo.
Oh, I can't argue that.
Yeah. So the biosphere is obviously the living stuff, and a lot of the spheres are affected by the biosphere. Things living on rocks or living on ice or living in things modify it and are part of the important cycling of carbon as well as other chemicals, nitrogen cycles and all these other things.
Right, exactly. I mean, I have the least to say about this because I just work with rocks, so... I will say that on this graphic, the only other thing that has a living thing on it is the atmosphere website, or the atmosphere sphere. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the biosphere is incredibly important when we start talking about topics like erosion and all these geomorphological topics.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's so weird to think about plants not even being here at the first part of the world, right? So these spheres kind of came into being at different times. And then one of them, like the cryosphere, well, the biosphere too, right? Didn't exist for a while. It's kind of cool to think about that even these five basic staples of understanding the Earth have changed so much, right? We didn't even have continent. Well, we flooded everything, so we didn't even really have continents for a while either.
And you know, it's shown even in this graphic that that you had sent that I'll link. It does a good job of trying to show that these things interact with each other. But no matter how you draw it, we're still drawing lines somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not the case at all. These are not, you know, one doesn't exist within the other. Or no, they're all existing simultaneously, influencing each other in many ways, and it's a system. Any change in one impacts all of the others.
Yes, that is exactly right. But I mean, maybe there's not five. Maybe there's more. So I did that nice little technosphere segue because when I was looking up spheres of the Earth, trying specifically to find this graphic, I found this game called Seven Spheres. And I thought that was okay. I'll click on this. Sure, you got me. And it talks about, it defines our planet as seven interconnected spheres. Okay, cryosphere, gotcha, check. Hydrosphere, atmosphere, biosphere, and lithosphere. And then it breaks out magnetosphere,
which
obviously sure. I'm a pro of making that one its own separate thing. And then it says technosphere. And I thought that was weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose, so, I mean, the magnetosphere goes out into space, and there's lots of cool things there that we are not qualified to talk about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, true. But, like, technosphere.
I mean, the definition, like, of technosphere says the realm of technology.
So it's like, is that part of the biosphere? This feels, for this little game, it felt very deep. Is what I'm saying.
Right.
Right? Because, like, does that just go into biosphere? Because we're the ones that made all that technology? I don't know. Is it enough? Is technology enough now that it gets its own sphere? This is really what, like, cemented me into having this as a topic, because I wanted to hear you talk about this.
So I found an estimate from UNESCO of the technosphere's weight.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So they say the technosphere weighs 30 trillion tons.
Whoa.
And it encompasses all technological objects manufactured by humans, as well as the mass of carbon dioxide industrially emitted into the atmosphere.
Wow. Okay.
And there's a art piece in here, which normally, you know, art generally is not something that speaks to me. It just never has. Sometimes I see like something that's really nice, but a lot of times the deep interpretive things, that's just not me. But there's a photo in here of an artwork from 2015 by a Belgian artist where he took a piece of rock of malachite and sculpted into it where it looked like there was a fossilized flip phone in it.
Oh my goodness. That is so cool.
The technosphere really does. I mean, it's producing not only all this carbon dioxide, but it's producing all this e-waste. Mm-hmm. And we've heard more and more about e-waste in recent years. You know, all the natural resources that go into creating our technology, all the gold and rare metals, and now lithium. So right. Yeah, it's that's all part of the technosphere, and I could see it becoming its own thing.
I thought it was very interesting. And not in a million years, if I had to be forced to come up with another sphere, I would have been like this 17 spheres. I would have been like, oh, yeah, the troposphere, it's its own thing. It's not a part of the atmosphere.
Right.
Right. Like, what are you doing with this? Mm-hmm. They even have a plasmasphere, too. I might have gone there before I thought about the technosphere. I think it's really cool. Because just like the rest of the spheres, just like you said, like it's interacting with all of these things, right? You're a large part of the technosphere and the cryosphere.
It's true.
Uh-huh. So you have, I mean, it's how we made these spheres in the first place, right? Probably looking at these different technologies that help us classify them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's a lot of technology depends on different advances in material science.
That's right. You can't just make anything out of any old crap.
Well, I mean, maybe you can. And that brings us into everybody's favorite segment of the show. Fun Paper Friday.
Yay. This paper is so aggressive. This Liu Wang and his co-authors are so angry when they wrote this. It is just the best.
And so it's from American Chemical Society Nano. And it's, will any crap we put into graphene increase its electrocatalytic effect?
I mean, right? This was very aggressive.
You know, there are certain times in a researcher's life where you find a hill worth dying on.
I laughed.
And this one was one of them.
I can't stop laughing right now. I laughed so hard at this paper. Not anything to do with the content at all. But the tone is just like, these researchers had enough and they were going to sit down and write this dumb paper to show everyone that what they were doing was dumb and they were going to tell them all about it.
So to me, this comes down to the least publishable unit debate of like, do you publish a lot of papers, each with the least amount of information possible to be a unique standalone paper, or mm-hmm. do you work on these large works? And
right.
So graphene, it's a weird arrangement of carbon atoms, right? You get these sheets mm-hmm. of hexagonal lattice structure, and it's really tough, flexible, light, got a lot of applications in technology. And people are always wanting to improve it. So they're trying to increase its electrocatalytic effect. And scientists have been doping it, or just adding to it, really, all these different impurities, elemental impurities. So these authors point out, well, first we, you know, we added a lot of the standard impurities that would fit. And then we said, well, what if we did two impurities? And just started doing every possible combination of these. And really seeing that, yeah, there's an effect, but everything has close to the same effect, maybe marginal gains. Mm-hmm. Is this worth doing?
And they said, well, we're going to go one step further, and we're just going to dope it with some crap. Literally.
Literally. So you think about what doping generally, you know, what you use. You might use some boron, nitrogen, sulfur, phosphorus. A lot of these things, like nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur, are in guano. So once again, everything comes down to poop.
Whenever there's a poop-related thing, I think about that awful fun paper we did about the frozen poop knives.
The poop knives,
That one sticks with me.
Yeah.
It's so gross. But it turns out that, like all this other stuff, crap's really good to dope graphene with.
Yeah. It worked just as well as all of these very expensive, pure, difficult-to-use, hazardous doping processes.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And so I thought it was very interesting talking about like these. it's a column and a half paragraph, the opening paragraph. And at the end, you know, they talk about like, imagine this societal impact when we're using these like metal-free catalysts, right? And so you don't have like platinum or anything like that, you're just using poop that you're already generating anyway to help with batteries and anything else you need to do with electrocatalysts. And so guano, which was in the past a highly profitable product, right? Because of all the, I mean, did they just use it? They used it for more than fertilizer, right? Like in the past though, it was like a really expensive,
it was a commodity, yeah, a traded commodity.
It was a commodity, right? Yeah, yeah. So said, hey, look, we could make guano a make guano great again. Did they say something like that? They said something like that.
So, yeah, it's early on in the paper. It has become almost a paradigm that the once fantastic graphene for electrocatalysis is not so fantastic anymore, and we need to add something to it to make it great again.
That's very good. I knew there was an even snarkier comment they had.
So, and then they say they're going to do this to, you know, kind of prove the pointlessness of all these ever expanding, like, you know, they point out if you go to three dopants, you could have 95,284 combinations that you could publish.
Yeah.
And they say to make our point of the meaningless efforts to co-dope graphene with various elements experimentally, we evaluate in this work if guano-doped graphene poses any advantages over non-guano-doped graphene.
And no, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can dope it with the guano and it works great, so you should just do that.
And I do like they say one here. One may exaggerate only a little by saying that if we spit on graphene, it becomes a better electrocatalyst.
Oh, it was really great. And they acknowledge in the end, you know, to conclude in a positive and a bit satiric tone. Right? Like, basically, we can start to dope the crap. In addition to just adding guano, we can add stuff to the feed of the thing making the guano and make it even better.
And imagine how many papers could be published on that.
Oh man, I'm keeping this one on my desktop probably. Like it was so good.
You can just tell this is somebody who had to sit through another session at whatever conference of everybody reporting a very slight tweak on the same thing they reported last year and still getting buckets of money to do it.
Exactly. There are some people that get real upset about this kind of thing. Oh boy. Yep. I remember going to a like how to be a professor conference thing when I was still a PhD student. And that was essentially what one of the speakers said. They said, publish as little info in as many papers as you can. And I thought, wow, that seems like awful advice.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, apparently, like I said, Liu Wang and his co-authors had also just had enough.
Yes. But, well, if you have results of different dopings of graphene and evaluations of its electrocatalytic effect, we would love to see that. Shannon, how can they get a hold of us?
You can get a hold of us at don'tpanicgeocast@gmail.com. You can tweet your doping things on X. We are at Don't Panic Geo. I'm at Shannon Doolin. John is at Geo_Lehman. And as always, thank you to our Patreon supporters for keeping us going. Patreon.com/Don't Panic Geo.
And until next week, remember, don't panic.
It's not an exact science.
Any opinions, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed are solely ours and do not necessarily reflect the views of our